It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to the 39th episode of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. In this final episode of 2011, I'm bringing you a fun interview with Josh Keaton, who provides the voice for Hal Jordan and Green Lantern, the animated series on Cartoon Network. Then I get to talk news and previews with Ian Cullen and Gianluca Glazer. And to wrap things up for the year, I have a special little holiday presentation that I think you'll enjoy. So let's get to it.
Brightest day and blackest night, no evil shall escape my sight. Let those who worship evil's might beware my power, Green Lantern, light!
I'm talking today with Josh Keaton, who does the voice of Hal Jordan in Green Lantern, the animated series, which is debuting on Cartoon Network. How are you doing today, Josh?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Great. I saw the first two episodes and I really loved them. I'm really looking forward to when the show comes back in early 2012. So I'm just curious as to how did you get to do the voice for Hal Jordan in the show?
Well, basically it came around pretty much like any other VO or on-camera job. It was through an audition. And with this show, the first audition, well, to tell you the truth, the casting process for Green Lantern was so fast by comparison to the other projects that I've done that I almost didn't think it was real for like the first 10 or so episodes. I kept thinking that they were going to like have the real Hal Jordan outside in the car and they were going to bring him in. But yeah, it was really, really quick. Usually there's an audition and then they have a callback and they give you different sides. And then they have, and for those that don't know, sides are what they call the audition script. And then they'll have you in for another callback, and it's usually a few months of a process. Whereas with this, there was one audition that I submitted from my studio at home, just did it via MP3. They called me back. I went in, I read, Bruce Timm was there, and I found out next week that I was cast as the lead in the show, which was kind of nuts.
That's pretty quick.
Yeah, it was definitely a whirlwind.
Under Batman the Animated Series, they went through a whole host of people until they finally ended up with Kevin Conroy.
Kevin, yeah.
And he tells the story where he was doing the audition, he was in there in the studio with them, and he started to do things, and all of a sudden they started to run around in the background. He could see them. He knew he'd done something either right or wrong because they were all running around. And so that's how he got the job Batman. I just wondered if it was anything like that, but I guess it sounds like they probably learned a couple things in the time since they cast Batman the Animated Series.
Definitely. But yeah, it wasn't anything like that. It was really, really quick. And I auditioned originally for both Hal and Razor.
Oh.
And they called me back for Hal, which was cool. Mm-hmm. Very, very pleased with that. And then, yeah, it was just super, super fast. I mean, I was in and out of that audition in probably about not even 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. And that was it.
Wow. Now, how far are you into the season right now recording? Have you finished the first season or?
Yes.
You have. Okay.
Well, yeah, we finished recording it. They do all the vocal records first and then they send it out to get animated. Mm-hmm. And then it'll come back before it airs. And if there's anything that needs to get changed or if the animation came back and the performance of the lines didn't quite match up to the tone that was set at that point, mm-hmm. we'll go in and redo some stuff or, you know, with fight scenes, we'll go and do some of the noises and all of that.
Because mm-hmm. you've done a lot of voices for video games and things like that. Have you ever watched yourself and listened to the voices after the whole package is put together?
Definitely, mm-hmm. definitely. And especially it's cool because these are all projects that I've had an interest in. Green Lantern was a little bit different just because I didn't have the same familiarity that I did with Spider-Man. Spider-Man was my favorite comic growing up. So I went in there pretty much knowing the role without knowing what they were going to throw at me. Like, I already had a voice in my head for Spider-Man. I already had mannerisms. I had everything down because that was what was in my head when I was reading. Mm-hmm. I didn't have that for Hal. So I had to really go and research as much of that as possible. And it's always fun to see how everything turns out, because I'm only really contributing an ingredient. And then after that, I'm going to get to see how the animation plays out, how the backgrounds play out, how the music plays out. Music's a huge part of the overall product. And getting to see that all come together is a lot of fun for me.
Well, I got to interview Frederick Wiedemann a couple of weeks ago for the podcast.
He is incredible.
Yeah, he got
he's absolutely incredible.
He got nominated for an Annie Award or something, I believe.
Yes.
So I'm really happy for him about that. He was fun to talk with, too. Everybody that works on Green Lantern seems to have a lot of fun with the project. And that's one of the things I think that comes across on the screen.
Definitely.
Very enjoyable.
Definitely.
Now, you said you didn't know much about Green Lantern when you were growing up, but you did read comics, you were telling me, before we started to record?
Yes.
You said you liked Spider-Man. He was your favorite character?
Yeah, Spider-Man was my favorite, followed up by Wolverine. I'm not a tall guy. Mm-hmm. I'm not super short, but I'm not like 6 feet tall or anything. So I would always be rooting for the short guys to kick ass. Mm-hmm. And that was always Peter and Wolvie. Yeah. So those were my two main ones. There really wasn't a lot that I didn't browse and pick up and check out. I read some Batman, I read some Superman. But yeah, Green Lantern was something that I just wasn't all that familiar with mm-hmm. before this show. And then once I got the part, I was like, whoa, okay, well, I got this part. I better really start figuring out who the heck Hal is. Mm-hmm. And so then at that point, I just started reading a bunch. I read a lot of the Geoff Johns stuff. Mm-hmm. I based most of my Hal on a couple things, mostly a lot of what was in Secret Origins. Mm-hmm. I thought that that did a really, really nice breakdown showing his family life. There's an image in there that was really, really powerful to me, which was him showing up on his 18th birthday, pretty much risking disownment from his family in his dad's flight jacket to join up, because this is what he wanted to do. I mean, he wanted that so bad, and want is what leads to will, you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, that kind of broke it all down for me, seeing his family dynamics, seeing all of that. And I also wanted to make sure that he had some, like, a military bearing to him, because he's a military guy. Mm-hmm. I mean, his dad was a military guy. I didn't want him to come off as too slapstick or too, there had to be some sort of button-downness to him, in my opinion, just based on what he grew up around.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've done other DC comics. You did The Flash and Aquaman in Justice League Crisis on Two Earths, which is a direct-to-DVD movie that I really loved.
Yeah.
So, and you've also done Hercules. You've done, Marvel Superhero Squad. Man, you've done a whole lot of things. You were on Firebreather, which Cartoon Network just recently showed again.
Yeah. I got to play a douchebag. I got to play Troy.
You were also in The Batman.
Actually, it was Batman the Animated Series. That was the first time I ever worked with Bruce Timm, and this was when I was really, really young.
Really?
I don't even remember the storyline. I don't even remember the character I played. I think it was young Michael. I don't even remember the storyline. I was very young. And I think what happens is if there are two brothers, one goes one way, one goes the other, one ends up being a criminal, the other one ends up being a priest. I was the one that grows up to be the priest.
Oh, man, I love that. That's one of my favorite Batman the Animated Series episodes.
Yeah, I was in that.
Oh, man, that was great.
I've been working with Bruce for a long time without either of us even really knowing.
Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy how paths cross and overlap and mm-hmm. continue to go back and forth. And you tend to kind of forget some of the things that you do because you view it as a job, especially for the smaller things. You go in and you do your thing mm-hmm. and you leave, and you don't really realize that it has a life after that. Mm-hmm. And that's another reason why I really try to watch as much of the stuff that I do, because I want to remember it. I want to remember it when somebody asks me about it later and say, oh, man, how was it to work on this? And I don't want to have that blank stare and be like, what?
Because you've done recent things like Symbionic Titan. You were a singer on there. You've done all kinds of wonderful things. Now, you've also done on-screen as well as voice.
Yes. That's actually where I started out.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I started out doing on-camera. Voiceover, I kind of fell into. The first things that I did in VO were Peter Pan and the Pirates and the Back to the Future animated series. Uh-huh. Actually, no. Before that, I played Linus in the Peanuts cartoons in the 80s.
Wow.
There was one special and a bunch of MetLife ads, so I got to do that. But those were all things that I was sent out on by my on-camera agent. And it wasn't until I did Hercules that I got a dedicated agent that just submitted for voiceover.
Wow.
And that's when that ball started rolling. But yeah, I mean, on-camera was where I started out. And when the writer's strike happened and a lot of the opportunities were gone for a while, I managed to land a couple of really, really good VO parts and the ball started rolling. But flash forward a few years later and I've been so busy with voiceover, I haven't even had time to audition for on-camera. So that's definitely an avenue that I want to go back down. Because again, that's where I started. And there's a lot of on-camera stuff I'd love to tackle. I've had the opportunity to voice so many great superheroes. I'd love to do some comic-based stuff on the other side of the screen as well as other things. But that's definitely a road I want to go back down.
Now, do you still read comics now, or are you pretty much out of that?
Oh, yeah, of course, because if nothing else, if not even just for enjoyment, for research, I firmly believe that comic-based movies and shows are good when they're not overthought and when they don't really stray too much from the original intent of the comics. You have to look at it this way. These are canons that have been around for decades. I mean, that's decades worth of character and plot development that's already gone on. So to think that you're going to rethink that and make it revolutionary and change all of these things and still have it kind of stick to that is kind of silly. The comic book movies and shows that have done really well have really adhered to the original stuff. Not to say that they haven't brought in new characters and made things like that work, but they still really kept in with the spirit of the original property. So I'm a big, big advocate of knowing the source material, knowing what you're going to put up there.
Well, now you've got live action movies coming in, comic related characters like Marvel's doing that pretty well. DC's trying to get back with that. Batman is about to come out again and they're working on Superman. So it's not a bad thing to have background in comic book and comic book related things. So
without a doubt, it's all there.
Now, I was curious. One other thing I wanted to ask you about Hal Jordan, too, is that Phil Lamar, who does the voice of John Stewart on Justice League International.
Yes.
He does. Well, I watched him one time talking about how he decided to do the voice, and he saw the drawing that Bruce Timm had done. And here was this, and he referred to it as a barrel-chested guy. And he doesn't have a voice that's really that deep, but all of a sudden his voice got really deep when he was talking about it. And when you hear him talking to other characters that he voices, he was doing a Static Shock, and he was the main character, which was a teen. And once in a while, they'd have Green Lantern on there, you know, John Stewart, and the two of them would be talking to each other. And it was just the weirdest thing to know. This is him back and forth doing those things.
Oh, yeah. He's incredible. Phil's a really good friend of mine, and he was on Spectacular Spider-Man with me, and he played Robbie Robertson and Rand Robertson. And the voice that comes out of him, I mean, he's not a big guy either, but I mean, he's voicing this guy who's got to be 6'4 and 300 pounds, built like a tank, you know, and he just gets down in here and scoop. And it's pretty crazy. It's pretty crazy watching him work.
Now, did that come into play when you decided to do Hal Jordan? Did you look at the drawings that Bruce Timm provided, or, you know, you said you read the comics, and I was just curious, was there anything else that was involved in how you decided the voice?
Well, definitely, he was very different from the way I portrayed Spider-Man in Spectacular, because Spider-Man in Spectacular was a teen. You know, he was still in high school, so I definitely had to pitch up my voice. Whereas with this, he's a, again, a barrel-chested guy, a big guy. He's got a jaw, you know. So originally, I was thinking of a few things. I was thinking of Captain Kirk. I was thinking of Patrick Warburton. I was thinking of these really heroic, in Warburton's case, like manly men, and trying to put some of that spin on it. But yeah, I mean, especially when I saw the drawing, he was very barrel-chested and very, very, had very pronounced jaw. And I'm like, this guy's got to sound like a guy. You know, he can't sound like a teen. And so really, it was just pitching him down. And a lot of it wasn't so much in the vocal quality. A lot of it is in the way he speaks and how he is pretty sure of whatever he's going to say before he says it.
Now, another thing I was curious about, too, is that when you're doing the same character for multiple episodes, you know, how do you keep yourself engaged in that and make it interesting to you instead of just doing the same thing over and over again? How did you handle Hal Jordan in that way?
Well, there's different stories that are thrown at you every week. And I approach my voiceover stuff the same way I would approach an on-camera role. There's always that possibility of somebody just kind of phoning in a performance, but then I could never do that because that's there forever. People are going to watch that 20 years from now, and I would really hate for somebody to watch it and say, man, that Hal Jordan was just full of suck. You know, there's no way that show was awful. You know, it's something that I take pride in what I do, and I love what I do. So this is fun to me. I'm going to go through, I'm going to read that script, I'm going to visualize it and make all the choices and figure out exactly where he is, where Hal is mentally in all of these scenes, who all these people are in relation to him and how he feels about them, and apply all those questions and answers and do all that, all the actory stuff. You know?
Well, it's interesting you say that, because when I talked to Freddie about the music, he was trying to score music that was very movie-like. And what you're saying to me...
Succeeded for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And I love the music. They gave me a little bit to listen to, and as well as listen to the episode. And it's interesting. You're saying some of the same kind of things as far as Hal Jordan goes. You want this to be a successful or a well-known or a vibrant Hal Jordan that people can remember and look up to as the years go by.
Without a doubt. And I mean, if you think about it, there's never been a Green Lantern animated series. He's shown up in a lot of other shows. Various Lanterns have shown up in, you know, Justice League or direct to DVDs and things like that. But there's never actually been a Green Lantern animated series. So it's exciting, but it was also very daunting going into it, because I'm like, there's going to be a lot of expectation from Green Lantern fans for this to be a good show. And I really, really did not want to sell that short or let them down.
Because we had the live action movie, which didn't do all that well in the theaters.
Right.
But I'm still hoping that'll come back when that hit the DVDs. I hope the sales are such. And I really hope that your animated show does that too, that it keeps the excitement going for Green Lantern, that keeps Warner Brothers interested in making not only more of your show, but doing a live action movie as well.
Yeah, most definitely. Most definitely. And it'd be cool to see a live-action Justice League. I mean, that'd be pretty insane.
And we've been dreaming about that for years. I mean,
with Josh Keaton as Kyle Rayner.
You talk about Kyle Rayner. Obviously, you know the different Green Lanterns. Is that your favorite Green Lantern? Now that you've done some research on him, is he the one that you relate to the most?
I can't really play Hal because I'm not tall enough and my jaw's not big enough. And Ryan Reynolds is already doing it.
Oh.
Out of the ones that I've read, that's definitely the one I would see myself as. I don't see myself as nearly as douchey enough to be a guy. So
But yeah, I would definitely love to give that a shot. I definitely identify with him.
Now, I don't want to get any spoilers from you. I don't want to get you in trouble in any way. But
oh, of course.
Were there any sequences that you can generally talk about when you were doing HAL that stood out to you that you enjoyed doing more than the others?
Let me see. Yeah, I got to be careful what I say.
Freddie talked about the time when Hal's really angry at one point, and he's got, when he's dealing with Razor, and he's got this, his voice just really, he just reveals this anger. And I don't know whether that was one of the ones that you did, because I really love that part too. And I loved when he's saying the oath as he's falling down onto the ship.
Yes.
You know, oh, yeah, that was just, I sat there and went, whoa. That was just such a cool thing. And I've never seen Green Lantern say the oath like that before. He's saying it when he's going down, just about to hit the power battery. And I just was like, whoa. See, that's one of the things I hope about this show. And the way that you're voicing it too to me is that we're going to see things that we haven't necessarily seen before. And even though you want to see things that are true to the character, you also want to see things that are new and different. And
sure,
it sure sounds to me like that's what you guys are up to.
Yeah, without a doubt, without a doubt. There's an episode where Hal speaks alien, and that's really all I can say about that. But that's going to be a really, really cool one. There's going to be a lot of stuff because it takes place in frontier space, and that's a huge, huge territory. So I've said that it's not necessarily that the sky's the limit. It's kind of like our sky is the starting point because it's really way beyond that. It's got the ability to have the scope of something like a Star Trek where you can go anywhere. So yeah, you're definitely going to see a lot of new stuff.
Mm-hmm, great. Do you get to voice any of the aliens at all, or are you strictly Hal Jordan?
Well, it depends. The main characters and guest stars that come in, those are always cast. Mm-hmm. But there's always incidental parts. There's always like little things that are like a couple lines here and there. And depending on who's in the room and what they need it to sound like, they'll sometimes throw it to us. That's actually what happened with Aquaman in Justice League. Mm-hmm. That wasn't a cast part. I was cast as Flash. And there was, I think, only two lines that Aquaman had in that. Mm-hmm. And so we were already in the recording process. They said, all right, hey, Josh, say this. All right, Carlos, say this. All right, Josh, you're doing it. And I was like, sweet, which is awesome because I actually think that that Aquaman's an underrated character.
Well, I'll say.
And I definitely thought that was pretty neat to be able to voice him even for a couple lines.
If you get a chance, you might want to pick up Jeff Johns' new book, which is Aquaman. He's doing Aquaman. He's talking about how Aquaman is very underrated. In fact, a lot of people disparagingly speak to him because he's an underwater guy. Nobody has any use for him and stuff like that. So you might get a kick out of that if you ever get a chance to pick up
Yeah, definitely
Aquaman
check that out.
From that.
I've been catching up on a lot of the relaunch stuff.
Oh, yeah. The new 52 is great fun. I really enjoy that stuff. I'm a big Batman fan myself, as well as Green Lantern. And so for me, all the Batman stuff, I'm really enjoying. But as you've gone through the stories now, you familiarize yourself with Green Lantern and someone. And again, not spoilers. When you did the stories and acted them out and read them and prepared for them, did you see that there was a lot of different kind of things going on than what you expected?
Definitely, because from the stuff that I read in the comics, I mean, a lot of it was Earth-based and Oa-based. The show goes places that have never been in the comics. Mm-hmm. They still tie in, and they do a great job of tying it into the lore thus far. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of new stuff, so it really is a workout for your imagination to visualize this. And then when you finally get to see the finished product, it's pretty awesome.
See, now you got me all excited to see this now. We have to wait until the next couple of weeks from now before this thing's actually coming back.
Well, I have to wait, too. They don't show it to us either.
Oh, you haven't seen them?
So I've seen the first two, but I mean, this is why I like going to the ADR sessions. ADR is the pickup sessions that they do when we go back and re-record some of the lines and do the fight sounds and all of that. But that's really the first time that I get to see anything. And then it's unfinished. I mean, a lot of the animation's not even rendered or lit or anything like that. Sometimes it'll be kind of maybe 80, 90% done, but that's the first time I get to see even clips of it, pieces of it. And then I watch it when everybody else does.
Cool. Well, you're like me now, because I'm very excited to see this stuff. The hour-long thing just blew me away. Like I said, there were so many things in there that I really loved. And I thought your voice was a perfect voice for Hal Jordan, to be honest. So
thanks. Appreciate it.
I just think you did a great job with it, and I'm really looking forward to it. Again, don't get in trouble by this, but do you think there's a possibility we could see more than one season of Green Lantern in the animated series?
I would hope so. There's no word on that as of yet. Mm-hmm. It's very rare for shows to get a pickup before they've even started airing officially. Mm-hmm. But I have my fingers crossed. I think that the response from the first two episodes has been overwhelmingly positive, which is great. And the ratings came back. The ratings were really, really stellar. So we all have our fingers crossed. We would all love to see this become like a Batman the Animated Series of Green Lantern. Oh. I mean, that's really what everybody's working towards. That's the goal. And we'd all love to see that. But there are no guarantees as of yet.
Right. I hadn't heard much about the ratings, so I'm digging around trying to find that. But I'm glad to hear you say that. That encourages me to dig some more. And like I said, the quality is just fantastic with Mr. Tim and Mr. Biedemann and you involved. I'm really anxious for that to start up next year. So you're doing a great job, boy. Keep it up. I can't wait to see it.
Thank you so much.
By the way, are there any other projects you're working on besides Green Lantern?
Let's see. I'm doing this, it's new to Nickelodeon, but it's not a new show. It's called The Winx Club, and I play this evil wizard in that. Mm. There's me as Spider-Man and Spider-Man Edge of Time, as well as Marvel vs. Capcom 3. Mm-hmm. That's currently out right now. I want to say that's it right now. Oh, Star Wars The Old Republic's coming out. I play a bunch of people in that.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Well, you keep busy.
Yeah.
That's great. Keep it up, too, because it's great fun to listen to your voices and to hear the different characters that you do. So I'm looking forward to it. I can't wait.
Awesome, man. It was great talking to you.
Well, great talking with you, too. Thanks. Welcome to the final news and previews of 2011. And with me is Gianluca Glazer. How are you, Gianluca?
I'm doing good, thank you.
And Ian Cullen, how are you, Ian?
I'm really cool, actually. I'm actually quite happy that it's not me staying up to the early hours of the morning and it's Gianluca that's up here.
We trade that every once in a while. Okay, why don't we go ahead and jump right into the news. Ian, why don't you go ahead first?
I've got a bit of sad news, actually, and I've got a feeling Gianluca would have wanted to talk about this as well as yourself. But Joe Simon, who was one of the two creators of Captain America, he sadly passed away. He was 98, born in 1913, and he was basically one of the first people to actually have influence on the comic books. He's right up there with Eisner and all the other greats that helped develop comic books as the art that they've become.
Mm-hmm. Very true. Gianluca, did you have something you wanted to say on that?
I was going to mention that there was also like another death too the same week. Mm-hmm. I think the same day, actually. Eduardo Breto, very talented artist, only in his 50s, died. Maybe might be most well known for his work on Teen Titans. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's kind of a sad day.
Yeah, two of them on the same time. And he's been working on, Breto's been working on Irredeemable recently, is the one that I know him for the most. So it's really sad to end the year this way with two bright lights going out.
It's quite funny as well because I've finished reading Joe Simon's autobiography about a month or two back. Mm-hmm. It's amazing that he was still so active, even well into his 90s, active enough to even write an autobiography, which, you know, isn't very long. It's about 200 odd pages long, but considering the length of the book, he packs a hell of a lot in.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Gianluca, how about you?
A few things that are kind of interesting. November sales numbers came out, before we were looking at the rankings. Mm-hmm. And one thing that really kind of stood out to me was Boom Studios had the top indie book on the charts with Peanuts issues number 0. And it was around the 20,000 range. So congratulations to them for that. The Beat, Heidi McDonald's blog, has this really good article discussing the popularity of the 52 titles now as opposed to when they first debuted. Mm-hmm. And it shows like a change in the charts because remember, guys, I told you the first orders were kind of based off of what retailers generally think are going to be popular. But then when we get around to the third issues, or the ordering of the third issues, you know, they have those first issues in the store and they kind of know what's selling and what's not selling. So kind of interesting. Animal Man had the biggest upward movement. It moved 10 spots. Of the 52 titles, it was the 35th title and now it's the 25th title. Demon Knights was next for Ian here. Frankenstein, Agent of Shade moved up 7 spots from 44 to 37. I don't want to go over all of this, but it's kind of interesting. OMAC, which was the last title before, moved up 4 spots to 48. Mm-hmm. The one that has dropped the most was Nuclear Man, moved down 8 spots. It was originally the 30th of the titles, and now it's the 38th. Significant drops, Green Arrow, went from like 21 to 27. Most of these have like had upward movements, but like I said, there have been like some that have either stayed the same or dropped. Sadly, Justice League Dark and Savage Hawkman have both dropped a few spots. They're still very safe. Justice League Dark is at 22 now as opposed to 18, and Savage Hawkman's at 31 instead of 27. But it is kind of an interesting chart. So if you're interested in that kind of stuff and seeing how they're performing, I would check out that article on The Beat. It doesn't talk about numbers now, but it is just overall in terms of popularity.
Now, what's the last one? If OMAC is not the number 52, what is now?
The new number 52 is Men of War number 51, Static Shock number 50, Blackhawks.
Really? Okay, so that's the lowest.
Originally 48, now it's 52.
Well, yeah, here's a little interesting thing that'll probably tie into this a little. But Paul Cornell, on his first of his 12 Days of Christmas posts, he's doing a quiz. Everyone can join in. It's basically takes a little bit of research, but basically anyone can do it. You've got to make certain predictions. And one of the questions on this quiz is which out of the titles of the original 52 comics is likely to be cancelled in 2012. I think he puts before August of 2012.
Mm-hmm. Blackhawks.
Yeah, so any initial results on that?
I've not looked. I only got through reading the post about half an hour ago.
Okay.
A couple other interesting tidbits of news. J.H. Williams III, who does Batwoman, he's going to be doing a variant cover for a new title called D.B. Cooper from Oni Press. It's going to be a mini-series, and for the first issue, my 1 in 10 variant cover will be by J.H. Williams III. And if you go online, you can find it. It's really cool. Mm-hmm. So definitely check that out. And Steve Pugh, who we all know and love here at the show, mm-hmm. he is going to be doing a issue of Animal Man in the near future. Mm-hmm. Just one issue as a guest artist. Mm-hmm. It was a title that he was originally working on back in the 90s. Mm-hmm. His style back then was a lot different than it is now. Both were excellent. So it's going to be really cool to see him on that particular issue. I'm picking it up.
Very cool. And congrats to him.
Hopefully it leads to more DC work for him, you know?
Really?
Yeah, hopefully they throw lots and lots of money at him from seeing his work.
Yeah.
Be like, here, do your own thing. Create something like the Ray, you know?
Yeah.
Jimmy Palmiotti did.
And did you like the Ray number one by any chance?
I didn't pick it up. I actually picked up a number of good titles. I did pick up Voltron. I thought it sucked.
Oh, sorry to hear that.
The story sucked and the artwork sucked. The only thing I liked was the lettering by Marshall.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. I just into the interject in there. I read the Ray and I liked it very much. There's a lot of comedic stuff. At the beginning, he can't control his powers. And so he keeps burning his clothes off or destroying his clothes. So he ends up naked a lot of the time in the very beginning, which they used for a lot of comedic effect, which I enjoyed. It's a very good book. I like it a lot. You got to figure that Palmiotti and Gray are going to do good things. So it was great.
I saw that on the news yesterday. You had a thing talking about Tale of Sand.
Yes.
The Archaea book.
Yeah.
How did you enjoy that?
I liked that a lot. I thought it was really well done. What's really interesting about the book is that it doesn't always have dialogue in it. There'll be pages that'll have dialogue, and you'll get into a long sequence that won't have any dialogue at all. It'll all just be drawing and action. And it's a really interesting story. You can get a sense that, you know, what Mr. Henson had in mind about doing this on the big screen, that this was, it's very, the way that it's done in the book, and it's, of course, the artist's interpretation of what the script originally said. But it's a lot of fun. It's very interesting, lots of action. It has a nice ending to it that I liked real well. So it's the interesting thing about the book, it's a hardcover and it's larger than normal. It reminded me a little bit of Holy Terror in the way that it was done, although it's not tilted sideways like Holy Terror is. This is up the regular way that the books usually go. But it's bigger, it's interesting. The coloring is interesting, I thought too. It's a very good book. I really liked it. It's a little expensive, you know, about $29, I believe, but it's definitely worth the money, especially if you're a Muppet or a Jim Henson fan, to see what he did when he wasn't doing the Muppets. What did he have in mind? This is a real good indication of what that was. So I liked it.
Awesome.
Okay, next thing let's go to is the previews.
Yes.
And Gianluca, why don't you go ahead and start the previews?
Okay, this is for titles coming out December 21st. And the big gun guys, DC, Marvel, IDW, Image, and Dark Horse. DC is the only one that appealed to me because you have Batman number 4 and you have Detective Comics number 4 coming out. Nothing else appealed to me in those other publishers. For the indie category, there's Planet of the Apes number 9. There's Kevin Smith's The Bionic Man number 5. Oh, and I think Kickstart has something that looks interesting, too, coming out as well. Mm-hmm. And if you don't know about it, I'll mention it. But if you do, I'll save it for you to talk about.
Why don't you go ahead?
They
had one supposed to be coming out on the 28th, was my understanding.
Oh, I have it listed here, Danger Academy, yeah. Graphic novel.
Yeah, well, that's coming out a little early. Okay, that's good.
So, yeah, Spychester Academy for Gifted Teens, the secret private school where the children of super spies go to be safe. But when their parents go missing, only these children can save them.
Mm-hmm.
So, interesting concept. It seems like it's for a younger audience, mm-hmm, kind of story, kind of like a Spy Kids kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, the thing that's nice, I'll have an interview with the folks behind that book early in 2012, so something to look forward
Tony
to.
Lee.
Yeah, so something to look forward to. Okay, Ian, why don't you go ahead and say what you're looking forward to?
Well, you know, not necessarily looking forward to it, but, you know, quite kind of interesting. Obviously, I'm looking forward to Bionic Man issue 5 and Detective Comics issue 4 I'm looking forward to, but John Luke has already sort of like briefly touched on those, but I'm a bit shocked that Detective Comics is actually coming out next week.
Well, actually, a little clarification on that. In the list, it's Detective Comics number 1, the 4th printing that's coming out.
Oh, that's real. Oh, shoot.
Just a little clarification on that. Yeah, I was
totally missed that.
Yeah, because issue 4 should already be out.
Mm-hmm. It is. That's all right.
But Dark Horse, this kind of caught my eye because I'm a bit of a Conan fan, but I'm not really enough of a fan to get the comics. But Conan Road of Kings issue 11 is coming out next week. They also have Solomon Kane trade paperback volume 3, Red Shadows, coming out, and that's from Dark Horse. From DC, well, I'm not really reading any of these or any of the books that are due out this week from DC.
You're not reading Batman?
No, I just read Detective.
Oh.
That's my Batman fits.
Okay.
I know that you, Wayne, will be excited about Young Justice.
Mm-hmm.
It's issue 11. It's due out. That's not a 52 comic.
Right.
From IDW, they've got a big hardcover book coming out, The Art of Joe Jusco. That's $50, so that's definitely an expensive Christmas present.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got Doctor Who Ongoing, you know, Volume 2 trade paperback, When Worlds Collide, mm-hmm, which, you know, Tony Lee's been doing some fantastic work on those.
Mm-hmm. Did you follow the current Doctor Who Ongoing at IDW?
I don't, as a matter of fact, no. I've been tempted to pick up the trades every now and again to see what it's like, but, you know,
mm-hmm,
it's one of those things.
I do, actually. It's a pretty good book. It's very faithful to the show. It's usually you have to buy several issues to get one storyline. It's usually like 2 or 3 issues at least for a storyline. So that's the only thing I don't like about that. I would rather they have it contained in one book, but that's what trades are for.
I know that Joshua Helfiakov is currently writing, I guess, a storyline in there. Mm-hmm. I was just kind of curious.
That's my thingy for this week.
Okay. Of course, Batman is the thing I'm looking forward to tremendously. Batman Odyssey Volume 2, Number 3 of 7, Neil Adams proving he can draw but not necessarily write, continues on. Birds of Prey Number 4, Blue Beetle, Captain Atom, Catwoman, DC Universe Presents, Green Lantern Corps, which is a good book by Peter Tomasi. I think that's a good one. That definitely is out. And of course, Justice League Number 4. Is out, and the combo pack with it. That's the number one comic that's based on all the surveys that I've seen for the last several months. So that's what DC wanted to accomplish. So that's interesting to see. Legion of Superheroes Number 4, Nightwing, Red Hood and the Outlaws, Supergirl, Thunder Agents Volume 2, Number 2 of 6, and then Wonder Woman Number 4, which is really doing so much better than I expected. It's just great. I like that book. And you're right, Young Justice is out, which is a good thing. I like that book. We get more of those than we actually do with the episodes, sadly. That's the thing I don't like about that.
Yeah, I actually seem to think it was the Volume 2 is like the second batch of 4 episodes on DVD.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got to admit, I was quite impressed. I got quite into it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, very good. That show is just a great, great animated series. So I love that show quite a lot. Other books that, real quickly, Venom number 11, which I like. It's probably one of my favorite Marvel books, along with Avengers Academy. They've restarted up the Fantastic Four now. The Human Torch came back to life, so now Fantastic Four is going off. But FF, everybody that's not in the Fantastic Four is in FF. There's also Formic War, Silent Strike number 1 of 5. I like those books. Those are great books based on novels, so I always enjoy that. Clint number 12 is coming out, interestingly enough. Green Hornet number 20. Incorruptible number 1, the artist edition. We talked about Irredeemable's artist edition last week, and now it's time for Incorruptible to do that.
Okay, I've got one quick thing to add, and you're not going to read this in previews because it's not distributed through Diamond in the USA.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But I think it is through the UK. But issue number 2 of Strip is out this week.
Ah,
cool.
I don't know how well it's doing in sales, but I could always find out. The first issue was really, really good. It had a nice mix of comic strips in it and a nice mix of features as well. So
cool.
Looking forward to issue 2.
Okay. I thought we would wrap up today by talking about some things that happened in 2011 that we were happy about or that we enjoyed. And I'll start off by and set the tone kind of the thing that happened in 2011 that has made me so happy, besides DC at least coming on par with Marvel, which was something I'm very happy about. But I'm also happy as a lifelong Batman fan to have Batman soaring as high as he does. The Batman comic is way up there next to Justice League, and that's good to see. And Detective is great. Batman Robin is great. I mean, all the Bat books, in my opinion, are great. Batwoman, which I wanted to mention to you, John Luca, was really good this time. They pull a big surprise. Oh, my goodness, the story was.
It did seem kind of short compared to some of the other books I was reading that week, but it is really good.
They pull a big surprise, and if anybody is vulnerable in this area in which she's vulnerable, it's Batwoman. So I was very surprised that they did that. I like it a lot. So that was a really good book. Batgirl, of course, was excellent, too. I never cease to enjoy Batgirl, which is always good. But it was a good week on the comics, and I just I'm so happy that Batman is doing so well. I've seen Batman through the low and the high points, and it's great to be back on the high points. As long as he doesn't have Calendar Man running around, I'm a happy guy. So that was the thing that I was particularly happy about this year. And I just, I don't know if we need to have a lot of stuff, but if you guys want to go ahead and mention the things along those lines that you enjoyed in 2011. John Luca, why don't we start with you?
Well, yeah, I mean, the biggest thing that happened in 2011 was the new DC 52. And like you, I'm really happy about it. I mean, they brought back Swamp Thing, really popular Animal Man. You've got like Justice League Dark, which I'm enjoying a lot, Peter Milligan. They did a lot of shakeup in terms of creators on different books, and then bringing back some books that you haven't read in a long time. Not everything's a hit, but it definitely created a lot of excitement and a lot of people checking things out. Other great moment for me was the Rocketeer Adventures anthology from IDW.
I agree with that, yeah.
That was been a lot of fun, too.
Did you get the hardcover, by the way?
The trade just came out. Yeah, the hardcover just came out.
Yeah, so. I have it, too.
Nice oversized.
I'm getting it for my birthday, so the week after Christmas, I'll be calling that store and saying, "Send me a copy of the hardcover."
Okay. Anything else, Gianluca?
If we were going to talk about like best artists and stuff like that, J.H. Williams III for me is hands down like just the most amazing artist. As far as writing goes, definitely the year of Scott Snyder, I have to say.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He's really soaring. It's interesting you mentioned artists because an artist that's really flown up in my estimation is Greg Capullo, who's drawing Batman.
Oh, yeah.
His art has just astonished me as how wonderfully good that is. He's doing very well. But you're right. Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo are a dynamite team on Batman. But interesting enough, the rise of Tony Daniel as a writer. He was an artist before, and he's the one that came up with that amazing thing that everybody still talks about, Joker's face hanging on the wall at the end of Detective Number 1. And he's also he's breathing life into Hawkman, too, which I like, too. I didn't think anybody could write Hawkman but Jeff Johns, but Mr. Daniels proved me wrong, so I like that.
you know, Tony Daniels' cliffhanger for issue one of Detectives, that has to go down as a cliffhanger of the year for me.
Well, you know, the surprise of the year, one of the things they talked about was a moment of surprise. There was the biggest surprise of the year to me was actually back in Flashpoint, Batman Night of Vengeance, in which we discover that the Joker is actually Martha Wayne. That I still have to pick my jaw up off the ground when I think about that. That was such a huge shock to me. This was a good year for comics all around on so many different levels. I think the art is great. I think, you know, independent comics are doing real well. Vic Boone was a great one. We've also, I thought Red Spike was one of my very favorite books of the year. Cool. So good. So thought-provoking. You know, I kept reading it and going, my gosh, well, what if this happened? What if that happened? So that was a great book. I think that also Moriarty is a book that I was very surprised how good it was.
Thank you. I got to mention The Vault. That was a special book for me. Mm-hmm. Three-issue miniseries. And I read it recently, and I'm really, it's really one of my favorites now, is that Val and the Outcast by Boom.
Wasn't that fun?
Michael Allen Nelson wrote. Yeah.
Yeah, it was good. I enjoyed that.
It was like Voltron should have been about like action, you know, adventure kind of thing. And you had action, but the art was kind of like muddy and, you know. It's also weird, too, because they're not in the actual Voltron thing when it's, like, out attacking, which in the cartoon they were. Mm. They're out there on the streets, you know. But with Val and the Outcast, you had really good artwork. You had a really interesting story, really good, about this king who now the whole town, like, thinks he's, like, some horrible, cursed creature that has to get killed, you know? Yeah. The guys he fought beside, you know, are all like, you know, I have to kill you. You're a blasphemy to the king that we know.
That's an interesting transition to go from to being a king and worshipped and adored to being an abomination and people are after you to kill you. This is going to be fun for Michael Allen Nelson because we get to see him do an ongoing story. I haven't seen him do that yet. At least the ones that I've read are always miniseries, so I'm really looking forward to that. It's going to be great fun.
Moriarty is a favorite indie of mine this year. Also The Vault.
Awesome.
But as far as other indie titles go, as in, you know, media tie-ins, which, as you know, I'm not a big fan of, I've been really, really surprised and blown away by what Darryl Gregory's been doing with Planet of the Apes books. You know, I've really enjoyed the arc. It's kind of like been a slowly brewing story arc over the past sort of like, is it 12 issues now? We're getting on for 12 issues?
I think we're about 7 or 8, actually, I think.
Yeah, I think we might be up to 9.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he said, you know, basically I've just been speaking to the guy in email, and he says he's actually just finishing up issue 12.
Ah.
But the storyline in that, it's been a slow-brewing story arc. The characters are really intriguing. You know, you kind of like got the Gringer Nitz, who's kind of like General Urko.
Mm-hmm.
In a lot of ways, already sort of like a little bit more right wing and a little bit more of a fascist. Mm-hmm. he enjoys his job, put it that way. And got Suggy, who's kind of like the leader of the humans. So it's just such a great book. And also Betrayal of the Planet of the Apes got off to a really, really strong start. And, you know, you got a character in that you'd be familiar with from the first Planet of the Apes movie.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you get a completely different take of him as a younger man in this book than you get of him in the movie, because in the movie he's sort of like he's kind of right wing and very hard to sympathize with. So in this book, which is set something like 30 or 40 years before the movie, he's a lot more moderate. So it's a really interesting take. I don't want to say who it is because, you know, I want to try and get people, encourage people to read the book.
Okay, any other points that you guys would like to make?
We were talking about the apes. It's definitely the year of the apes because we also had the movie that was really good. And then also Archaea released a prose book, Conspiracy of the Planet of the Apes, as well.
Yeah.
And Boom is now announcing that they're going to be releasing the old Marvel Planet of the Apes comics.
Oh, wow.
Like, I think the 70s.
Cool.
So they're going to be republishing that.
Very cool.
Lots of apes.
We're going ape over the Boom comics. Okay, and I guess on that note, I just want to say one thing. I wanted to thank you, John Lukubik, for participating in the podcast and also for your help behind the scenes. A lot of people don't know that how much help you've been to me behind the scenes on many different levels. So I just wanted to say thank you for your help in 2011. Looking forward to 2012 with you. And And to Ian, I want to say thank you. You let me go ahead and forage out on my own this year and do my own little podcast, which I've been wanting to do for a while. I've enjoyed being able to work with you on SFP Now. We've done that kind of stuff for a while, but it was a great accomplishment, a great satisfaction to me to be able to go out and do this podcast on my own. So I wanted to thank you for that, Ian.
Yeah, no problem.
Okay.
It's doing well, and from what I've been hearing, there's a lot of people that are enjoying the Wayne's Comics Hour each week. So
both of them are going real well. We've learned a lot this year. All of us have, I think, and it's been a very productive year. And I guess we'll talk with you with more news and previews in 2012. But thanks, you guys, as always.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne, as a man. I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored. I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast at sfpnow.com so you can keep reading your comics.
For the last portion of my final podcast of 2011, I wanted to share with all of you, 'twas the Dark Knight Before Christmas. It was the very first one of these Marvel vs. DC videos that I saw, and it has a wonderful little story to it and a great little message, too. Now, it's available on video on YouTube, so I highly recommend you go and see the video. But the audio actually holds up pretty well on its own. There are three people speaking. The first person is Alfred, the second person is Batman, and the last person is Santa Claus. And they're pretty easily distinguished, but you need to know that going in. So let's have a listen to the audio of 'Twas the Dark Knight Before Christmas.
'Twas the night before Christmas, and all through Wayne Manor, not a sound could be heard, especially not laughter. There were no stockings hung and no tree filled with lights, not a single Christmas decoration in sight. Master Bruce in his costume, and I in my robe, were up late on the lookout for evils unknown. I missed Christmas, but he said he didn't have time. None at all ever since the tender age of 9. It saddened me watching him year after year, never taking in joy, only dealing out fear.
I say, sir,
I pleaded with all of my might.
Master Grayson is having a party tonight. Master Drake and Ms. Gordon are sure to be there. Why not leave this bleak cave and enjoy some fresh air?
I've outgrown Christmas, Alfred,
he answered each year.
You can go if you want to, but I'm needed here.
I sighed and walked upstairs to turn off the lights.
Merry Christmas,
I said. His reply was,
good night.
I walked up to my bedroom, got under my sheets, and prepared to drift off into sweet, peaceful sleep.
Suddenly a noise woke me up with such a clatter, I ran to my window for more on the matter. And what should my wandering eyes happen to find but a man in a sleigh with 8 reindeer... No, 9! I was off to tell Master Bruce what I had spied. The fat man in the sleigh was in for a surprise. But it was my surprise. He had beaten me there. Just how fast was this man who could sled through the air?
Who are you?
Master Bruce yelled, demanding to know. The fat man's belly shook as he laughed.
Ho, ho, ho! Don't you know?
He asked, giving his heels a click.
Santa Claus, Father Christmas, Kris Kringle, Saint Nick!
The Batman moved slowly, not wanting to harm him.
Right, Santa. Let me take you back home to Arkham.
But the man disappeared. He was gone in a flash, leaving only some traces of old soot and ash. Suddenly, he was back just as soon as he left. This man was indeed quite fast in spite of his heft.
I've come here in peace,
said the man.
Have no fear,
Batman said.
Then explain to me why you've come here.
The jolly man laughed.
Christmas time is at hand. I bring gifts of joy to everyone in the land. The good people come to me with their requests for their heart's desire, and I do my best.
I need and want nothing from you,
Batman said.
Go and take to the streets of Gotham with your sled.
The man in red snickered and gave him a wink.
The person I'm here for is not who you think. I've no gift for you, though you've done much good, it's true. But the present I'm bringing tonight, well, is you. For when it comes to Christmas, you just disappear, and you leave behind all of the friends you hold dear.
Bruce said,
hold on a minute now. That isn't true. I give plenty of presents at Christmas. I do.
Gifts of cash, food, drink, clothes, anything I can find. So then how can you say that I leave them behind?
Giving gifts is something for which you've had a knack, but the spirit of Christmas is still what you lack. Your gifts are all sent, none given face to face, and you've never even accepted an embrace. If you're given a gift, you just turn it away, denying your friends what their hearts want to say.
I know all of their feelings, and they all know mine. Gifts are simply a symbol for which I've no time.
Well, Christmas is a time for which I've always felt. Allowing others in. Let your defenses melt.
My defenses are fine.
Batman furrowed his brow.
It's just a sign of weakness to let them go down.
Santa sighed.
I have never, as long as I've lived, had to teach 'tis better to receive than to give. I came here to open up your heart and your mind. You're determined to keep them both closed up, I find. You're just too filled with anger and pain and regret. Probably about both of your parents, I bet. You'd tell them you loved them if you could somehow, just like all of your friends want to tell you right now. Oh, the gift of allowing love to be expressed is one of the greatest gifts that one can get. For the past is behind us, the future unknown, and the moment is all that we have to call home. And so, now I leave you with this to think on.
And with that, this St. Nicholas fellow was gone. The master was silent. He was lost in thought. I wondered if this was what that fat man sought.
Alfred,
he said sharply, giving me a fright.
You mentioned something about a party tonight.
Soon we were dressed and ready and out on our way. Surely this was a miracle, one had to say. He had come bearing gifts and was going inside when he stopped to look up because he had spied that Santa Claus fellow, I exclaimed in the dark.
Master Bruce simply smiled, looked up, and said,
"Thanks, Clark."
And I heard Batman say as he walked out of sight,
"Merry Christmas to all. Well, at least for tonight."
Thanks so much to every one of you who've listened to my Wayne's Comics podcast this year. I want to thank the people who came on as guests and other people who helped behind the scenes. I also wanted to promote one of my favorite podcasts, one of the first ones I ever listened to, The Christmas Stocking, which is hosted by Lee Cameron. If you go to mychristmasstocking.net, you'll get to hear it. It's also available on iTunes. He does a great job on there. The podcasts are usually only about 10 minutes long, so I think you'll enjoy them. It'll add a little sparkle to your holiday season. I'll see all of you in early 2012, but until then, keep reading your comics.
And so I leave, knowing that a world full of heroes has nothing to fear.